welcome to the Gravel Junction podcast, your meeting place for all things bikes, adventures, and the stories that follow. I'm your host, Shaul Detmer. It has been a minute since my last episode, and I do apologize. I explained in the last episode, sometimes real life happens and bills have to be paid. And that's what happened. So, yeah, I would have loved to have knocked a few more episodes out, but it didn't go to plan. But I think I'm making up for it now. As I speak to you right now, I'm sitting in my little apartment in Girona, Spain. That's right. Very fortunate to call Girona a bit of a home away from home. It's always so good to get back here and see old friends and ride some bikes. Due to a bit of illness, I haven't been riding like I would have hoped, but that doesn't matter. Still plenty going on, including sitting down with some very cool people and chatting about all things bikes, adventures, and the stories that follow. Today's guest, someone that I'm sure many of you know, or if you didn't know directly, would have seen her work. I am referring to Girona, now Girona resident, Miss Sammy Sari, whose name I absolutely butchered in the episode, which I left in there because you guys get to have a little laugh at my expense, which is, you know, no problem with that. Sammy very kindly agreed to sit down and have a little chat to me, fit me in her busy schedule, because any of you who do follow Sammy will know that she is just all over the place, so many projects going on. So to be able to find a little bit of time to sit down and talk was very much appreciated. We sat in Girona Old Town in where Sammy has her studio. So we went down, discussed all things gravel bike, fixie bike, adventure cycling, storytelling, you know, photography, filmmaking, as well as some rather exciting news, which inadvertently kind of went semi-live on the show. Okay, I'm exaggerating a little bit. It actually went live the day before. She posted a little teaser, but I think I was one of the first people that... you know, in the outside world that she spoke to about it. So that was really exciting, like pretty big. Definitely the episode probably worth listening to just for that piece of news alone. But we'll discuss that a little bit more in the outro. Well, as is often the case, I've blabbered on long enough. Let's get into it. My conversation with Sammy. Please enjoy. It was informal. I just pulled out the digital recorder, threw it on the table, hit record. Just happy to be there in the studio chatting with Sammy. You'll hear coughs, you'll hear sniffs because we were both getting over a bit of bronchitis / chest infection. Adds to that authenticity we love so much. Here we go, my chat, my conversation with the wonderful Miss Sammy Sari. So here we are in Girona sitting with Sammy Sari. Is that pronounced correctly?
Sari, yeah.
Sari, damn it. I thought I practiced it enough with that. Sorry. Any of you listeners, if you have a bicycle or have the internet, you would have probably heard of Sammy or seen some of her work. Obviously very excited to be here, first and foremost, as we just mentioned before hitting record, my first in-person interview. So Sammy, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me here. Yeah. And this is, pretty funny. It's also probably my first podcast also, like...
Face to face, and in your studio, which I'm feeling very honoured to be in the Sammy studio. Cool. Well, I mean, might as well just get straight into it. For me, I kind of wanted to, as we said before recording, one of the fascinating things for me is not just the bike riding side of things with this podcast, is the storytelling, it's the visual side, and I think it's clear to see by not just your Instagram following, but the clients that you're working with, that you have a style which people sort of gravitate towards, which is awesome. And I wanted to kind of, we'll dig into that a little bit deeper, but maybe a good place to start is a little bit of background as to cycling, how you got into cycling, where you're originally from. Born in Barcelona?
Born in Barcelona, yeah.
So how long were you in Barcelona before you sort of, like, what was the...
what was the move, right?
Yeah, exactly.
What was the move? Born and raised in Barcelona, spent there pretty much all my life until my 17th. I discovered the first bike when I was 16 or 17, and it was just like a bike to, like, the day I discovered it, it was with a friend, and it was like this like flashy multicolor bike, you know, no brakes, fun sort of thing. And I was like, oh, I can get into this. And you can stop using public transportation and sort of like discover your city in the other way. So after that, I think a week after, I already bought my first bike with like a couple, 300 euros that I, you know, owned.
Working, like a fixie bike.
A fixie bike. A fixie bike.
Cool.
It was like a very shitty frame, painted in spray. But it gave me so much joy. I just remember I would ride every day, every night, go up and down Barcelona like 4 times. And just keep the shit out of it.
Exactly.
I think I spent so much money on tires as well, and I blew so many as well.
Of course, yeah. No, that's how you stop, right?
No brakes. Like, I never had brakes. And the first handlebar I had, it was only my hands, like, fitting in. Only my hands. That was the smallest handlebar ever.
I mean, so had you ridden bikes before? That was your first, like, entry into cycling, was you're going to take a bike with small handlebars and no brakes?
Yeah. I mean, who... When you're a kid, I think you always sort of, like... ride bikes,
sure.
In general, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, but I never rode bikes.
Yeah.
And basically, I was into like surfing and skateboarding and longboarding downhill and stuff like this. So completely another world.
Yeah, it's weird because I've been coming and going to Barcelona since like 2005, so many years, and it was always. But it's only the last few years that I've really felt that it's become more cycle friendly. Like that, when I'm there, that's all I use is the bike to get around, and it really seems to have kind of taken hold there. All right, so there was the fixie scene in Barcelona, as we were talking about earlier. I know there was a Berlin period there as well. Where did you move on from Barcelona?
From Barcelona, I actually went to live to Italy. Completely random. But I wanted to leave home when I was 17, so I went there, bought my fixed gear bike, played bike polo as well, and did a lot of alley cuts. That period lasted like for 2 years, and I came back to Barcelona. Then I went to a town called Saint-Tropez, which that was like pretty random.
Saint-Tropez in France, Saint-Tropez.
Yes, you might know Saint-Tropez.
Spent a fair bit of time.
Yeah, well, I lived there for like 2 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, that is one of the more
that's
I would
weird.
Never have expected.
But I was into the I was working on a cocktail, a very very fancy cocktail bar in Barcelona and restaurant, and they took me there as a cocktail.
Cool.
So.
Okay.
I spent 2 years there. I also brought my fixed gear bike, but obviously, like, I didn't really ride it. I ended up also working for boats on the winter. But that was not my life, basically.
No.
So I came back, and after that, that was when I started like racing a bit more, doing alley cuts, and then from this monster track, New York alley cut, first time I crossed overseas. And first time I do like this crazy like
was that like the Red Hook and those sort of things? Was that later?
No, this like that's sort of like similar period, but what it took me in it was like I loved it alley cuts because I'm in the city and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And with my friend we went to this nuts one in New York that now actually I got out a documentary about it, which is amazing. And then after that I signed up for this like rat race Berlin karting, and it was my first time in cleats. And I fucking loved it.
I mean, I'm just thinking, like, your bike handling skills from to throw yourself in the deep end like that must have, the learning curve would have been steep, I'm sure.
Mm.
How you didn't come a cropper in Barcelona traffic learning to ride on a fixie is beyond me. But I imagine, like, because you've got to be able to be confident on a bike to ride an alley cat, to do all those, know what the bike's going to do under you, or you just kind of made it up as you went along.
No, I think, like, unfortunately, there was a period I went way too confident on the bike.
Really?
And I, especially in cities, like, I
took
went beyond.
Risks.
Yeah, it took a lot of risks.
Those YouTube videos you see, you're like, oh no.
Yeah, something like that, you know? But I don't know. I love city riding.
Yeah.
I do love it. I miss it sometimes here, actually, in Girona.
That's because I was going to say, because a group of friends back home who hopefully are listening to the podcast, otherwise, we'll have words. They have alley cats and they do hill climbs and steel bike races and all that, and some of the stuff they get up to, like, there's real sort of a big notice at the end of their messages, guys, this is totally on you, this is not sanctioned racing, you know, you've got to take it, because I think they've banned it in a few places because of how out of control it gets. But it does, like, the way guys ride those bikes, and then I know in Berlin some of the time I've spent there, it's a big scene there, but they take it quite seriously there.
No, there is pretty serious. You can't really jump lights and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Which in Barcelona, that was, you know,
orange lights are like red lights, like it's a yield.
Yeah,
like,
you close your eyes and then you go through.
It's same in South Africa. It's sort of like, okay, you know, if there's no cars, you go. Whereas in Northern Europe, the looks you get if you walk through a red light is unbelievable.
Yeah.
so that's cool. Okay, so then that was the crit racing. So obviously there's a competitive side then too, because to do crit racing and all that.
Yeah, after that, I did this like rat race thing and randomly I got in the podium. So as a first race, it was not bad. So I got my first sponsor, which was a Berlin brand called 8 Bar. And,
oh, wow.
And yeah,
blocks,
yeah. Yeah. And then from there, they took me to Red Hook. I never ever trained before. I never ever had a road bike before. I never, you know, like I was just riding fixed gear for fun. Yeah. So went to Red Hook and nearly died.
It's funny because we were talking about before how, okay, with social media, I think it's easy. You feel like you have an idea of what people have been getting up to because we kind of put a bit of our life on social media. And having seen some of the films you've been in and you're racing, like I've seen some of the footage from you in Red Crit, and not knowing your history, it's like, oh, okay, I've been riding crits for years, blah, blah, just going in there. And now hearing you say, there's like, oh, there's this Red Hook thing. I'm going to go ride this and see what happens. I got this bike from Germany and off we go. It's pretty ballsy.
Yeah, I mean, when they said to me, like, you go into New York, I was like, okay,
sure.
Let's give it a try.
Yeah.
And I just remember, like I didn't know what was a red zone, so I literally just died.
Any big wipeouts?
No, not in the first,
crazy?
Yeah, no. In technical, I was really good. That was the thing, but not in speed, you know.
But I suppose in those technicals, half of it isn't. If you're able to
stay
upright,
you're good on that,
and you're confident in those corners, that's
I realized that afterwards.
Afterwards, maybe I've been doing it long. Okay, cool. So that was... I guess we could fast forward a little bit then, because now you're currently in Girona.
Mm-hmm.
I said we wouldn't talk about it in detail, but I'm sure you've spoken about it in depth, right? There's that little film where you happen to go with a motley crew of cyclists on a famous road in America with a bunch of dudes sponsored by some famous cycling clothing brand named after Ninja Turtle. The how did thereabouts and outskirts and all that come about that you found yourself there? Because I remember watching or listening to one of your podcasts or something in the past where it sort of wasn't planned. It was kind of a last minute thing, or you hadn't ridden those sort of distances. It was pretty deep end.
Oh my God, yeah, no, like it's a pretty funny story because somebody asked, Gus asked me, oh, I'm doing this like film, it's 60, you want to come?
Yeah.
And before that, we actually started a podcast with one of the guys from Albion as well about like music on riders,
yeah.
Right? And that's sort of how we started, like when we met. Anyway, I was into track racing. I was really training for crit life in general, like road or...
Where were you based at that time?
Berlin.
Yeah.
I was working in the Rafa clubhouse. I opened the Rafa clubhouse from Berlin.
Okay.
Yeah. As a barista, so like completely, you know, like stable life, normal
ticking
life.
All the fixie gear boxes there.
Exactly, ticking all the fixie gear, and like really like normal life. Anyway, this guy was just like, oh, I'm going to do the 60cc when I come. I was like, this is an opportunity once in your life.
Yeah.
Rather you take it or you're not, but this doesn't, you know, doesn't replicate or it doesn't come
back.
So I literally left everything and just went on it. And and that was for sure a turning point in all sense, you know?
Yeah.
I've been, like, all my life I had analog cameras. Like, my collection was like 21 or 30 cameras. Like,
okay.
I loved it, but it was fun. For me, never really.
So, that was something I'm going to ask you later on as far as the photography side. It wasn't, you didn't study it at school. It was just like, and I'm similar. I like the shutter sound from when I was 5 years old. So, you had these cameras. So, that was you. You had your analog cameras, but it was just purely for fun.
Yeah, and literally, I think I maybe had one in Berlin, but I didn't use it. Like, I was like, well, you know, I was really into like cycling. Anyway, I never ridden like long distance before. Like, as I say, I was training for something completely different, and I was in the velodrome all day. So when they asked me that, I remember asking to the friends of Berlin from Standard, which they were doing a lot of rides.
Yeah.
I was like, can we do a long ride? Like, I've never done, and I think the longest I've done maybe probably was like 100 km or something like that. And we end up doing this 100 I think it was 120 or 160, I can't remember, 160, let's say, like that. And it was, for me, it was like, oh my God, and it was a day that it was like 2 degrees, super cold.
Yeah.
Anyway, we did it, and I was like, oh, this is exhausting, like, I'm gonna die, you know, in Route 66. And like, well, talking like through funny, in Route 66, we ended up doing two big days of like 280 kilometers at 31 average. And like,
I remember that. I remember I was quite new to cycling at the time, and I saw those numbers, and I watched it again later on. I was like, that is, and it would have been a headwind. It would have been,
it would have been
horrible.
Everything. But, you know, you sort of, I don't know. I didn't even know how I managed to do like 25 days on the bike, to be honest. It was
pretty
well.
You suffered a bit. It was your knee.
Yeah, I had my knee.
But that's going to happen, isn't it? You ride those sort of distances and your body's not used to it. Things are going to break down.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, you don't know yet your body enough, or I didn't know yet my body enough to really teach it how to use other muscles and stuff.
Yeah.
So it was just a problem of like using the wrong muscles at the end of the story, which
yeah.
now I learned about it as
yeah.
well.
Strengthening.
It's good,
yeah.
Strengthening and like, you know, like activate your glutes and
yeah,
all this
your
stuff.
Your morning activations, you know,
yeah.
some salutations.
No, I do them in the morning.
Exactly,
so it's,
discipline.
It's good, it's discipline, which I've, my family did not teach me.
Yeah.
I never had discipline, that's why I've been all over, that's why I'm all over the world and all over the place all the time. But, you know.
But I guess that can also be a pro and a con, right, with that?
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
To have that sort of free spirit, and then as we move on in life, that you start to see discipline creeps in, like I guess where you are now with the amount of work, which we will talk about your projects, there has to be an element of discipline, right?
Oh,
because
definitely.
Especially when there's someone that you're answering to, which I personally, I like the idea of being slightly accountable to someone because it
yeah.
keeps me a little bit on the straight and
yeah,
narrow.
Yeah, yeah.
So, okay, so it's clear to say that Outskirts film or Thereabouts film with the guys was a turning point, bike riding, showing you riding long distance on bike, which I think is something you've done a lot of since.
Yep. Yeah, definitely on bike, because I signed for like a crit team called LA Sweat and unfortunately that didn't work, because as soon as I saw the adventures and other type of cycling, I was like, I'm not into crit anymore.
Yeah,
so literally
yeah.
I did Red Hook after, I think it was like not even a month after Route 66, and I was so cooked.
Yeah,
I was tired. I knew how to ride. I even tried to, I remember I tried to go on the wrong lap for like the lap prime. It was the wrong lap. Anyway, it was my only chance.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was just tired, and I saw this other type of cycling which I really was into and like I really wanted to keep doing it. So I stopped racing crits.
Oh, so that was for the, so that actually
LSH.
Triggered that, right?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
were you doing quite a bit of were you just photography on that? On that Outskirts film, were you sort of?
I
like,
did all the photography.
Right, and that was kind of part of the plan. Like, yeah, take a camera.
A guy handed me a camera and was like, take photos.
This is your job now.
Yeah,
okay.
This is your job, and can you help me in filming? And I was like, yeah. And he showed me everything. So, you know, I'm very grateful of all the learnings I've done with him because I think I'm in the place where I am right now thanks to that.
It was almost an apprenticeship, that little. That
yeah,
little
it was,
trip,
yeah.
It? Yeah.
But yeah, he literally handed me a camera and he's like, good, like take photos. And then he saw the first day's photos and was like, oh, it's really good. This is amazing. Like, I don't know, you have an eye for it. And I was like, oh, really? I don't know. Like, whatever. And I just kept going.
That's one of the points hearing you say that was, so there's this term that I often think about, like imposter syndrome. When you have those moments with people, and I've had similar moments with my photography, like, oh, this and that. And you're like, nah, it's fine. I kind of like it in my safe space here where I'll just, you know, take my pictures and put on Instagram, get a couple of likes, etc. But then you start like something like that where it resonates with so many people and it has an effect. You start going, okay, well, maybe I start backing myself a little bit with that. And so that's sort of the next point I have here, that right now, your Instagram is one of those pages where you go through and it's like, A, it makes you just want to get up off the couch to go adventuring, or B, just sit there, continue looking and living vicariously, going, oh, that looks cool. I might do that one day, you know. But that, because the way I'd sum it up is your Instagram at the moment is you on a bicycle with way too much extra weight attached to the back of the bicycle, whether it's surfboards, not little surfboards, big surfboards, skis. It's like, I'm going to put as much on my bike and then tow it somewhere, which I think is cool.
Yeah, actually, funny that. Yes, something like that. I don't know why, but I don't know. I've been really hooked onto like the multi-sport situation, and I think the bike is, as I say, a very well a very amazing tool to like get into places that you probably can't get on the car or on a public transportation. So yeah, I've been trying to, you know, show this into other people, and I did it with surfing, and now this winter I did it with skiing, and I want to do it with other sports, which they come up next fall in the year. But I don't know, I think I love it, and the same for photography. You know, I am building this bike for half the ultimate photography setup that I can shoot from the bike and stuff, and join the trips as well and stuff like that.
Because that's something I've noticed with my photography background. I do notice people who are riding bikes with photography and how they work. Because it seems like you've never been shy to you will take the heavy camera on your, you know, you'll take the gear you need. And there was a lot of people, myself included, it's like, oh, that's a long ride to have a camera digging into my shoulders. And then you always regret not having the camera with you. Whereas for you, it seems like there is always a camera with you if you're on your bike and recording it, which...
Definitely, it is as soon as I step off Girona now. I mean, Girona, it's kind of like, I do it if it's something special, but home, I think I've seen it quite a bit.
Yeah, exactly. So you can walk around without your camera knowing that, but when you... And I suppose it's more of a job now, in a way.
Yeah, it became a job, which sometimes I'm like... But still, like, it's not... Yeah, yes and no, like, it's my job. But also, when I go for an adventure myself, I just take the camera.
Yeah,
for sure.
Because it's part of what you enjoy.
I get motivated sometimes to ride because of what I'm going to shoot.
Yeah, exactly. Myself. Yeah, and I think that's what I wanted to sort of becoming a commercial photographer or videographer. Because what would you say? Like, you prefer film or photography or video?
Don't ask me that question.
Because the feeling I'm just like, oh, I feel that the video is sort of where you seem to be doing a lot of at the moment.
Yeah.
But is that more because of clients or because...
It's a mix. I love video. I love video because you can tell a story in a very amazing way. Mm. I love character stories in documentary, which in photography, it's very hard to express, I feel like. Or you can.
It's very one-dimensional.
It's one-dimensional. And like, it's very like... Yeah, plasm in one thing, and some people can take it one way and some other people can take it another way. But in the film, you can show the way you want to take it. You know?
Yeah.
So I love that part of it. I'm less of a commercial person. I don't like that things. I've done it, but you know, I do it for specific things. And then in photography, this time I'm throwing myself a little bit more in photography, if I'm not gonna lie, because I don't have time. Like I'm so full on that in filming, you need a lot of time and preparation, like pre-preparation and post.
I'm the same with like the video is exhausting. The video is like a proper commitment. It's a big operation, isn't it? And I sort of like the being a little more dynamic with photography. So I can take my camera, a underlying trend I've picked up, and tell me if I'm putting words in your mouth, but storytelling and narrative is very important to you, like when you do your projects, whether it's personal or work. And from what you're saying now is that with film, you're able to get that across easier. So is that something with commercial work that clients are coming to you because they like the way you tell stories and narrative, and they give you that license to kind of do that?
Yeah, so far it's been a bit like that. Sometimes it's been... You know, there's been like that, but then there's a bit of a misunderstanding and then the story doesn't come up and all this, like, typical, but it's totally fine. You have to have a bit of everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Say. But now, for example, I think that, if clients come to you, it's because they like the way you're doing it or they like your style. It's not, so you have to sort of like let them understand that if this is what you came from, or this is the style you want, well...
That's the way it is. Yeah, it's strange like that because it's you sort of you shoot how you shoot. You know, and then to adapt to find that middle ground. That's why I've always been intimidated by the idea of commercial photography or things like that, because it's like, oh, it's putting me in a box and there's pressure. It's like I don't know how to give you. I know how to do this, but that's what we're seeing nowadays with social media and all that is that you can have your own look, feel, voice. And then people can come to you and go, okay, this is what we want, which I'm guessing on the outside, it seems like that's what's happening with your projects that you're busy with.
In photography, I've done more commercial this last, let's say, year-ish. and I'm totally fine with it in photo.
So what, that's you with a crew off to a location?
Yeah.
And,
this
is the storyboards and off we go, sort of thing.
Yeah. I've done a big hiking one for Jack Wolfskin, and that was sort of like, oh wow, you know, I mean, it's Jack Wolfskin, it's like a pretty big brand.
Totally.
And that was, it was funny because the first shoot was like a really like commercial stuff, models and everything.
Mm.
And then the next day was a storytelling about five women going for a hike. So, you know, for me, it really hooked me up because also the other side, I was like...
There's that more organic side, which kind of resonates with you.
Yeah,
and
that was like natural. That was like how I will do any shoot.
Mm.
The other one was like location, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But you just have to adapt sometimes and do a mix of everything. And so far, I mean, I've been trying to adapt to every single...
And I suppose each project is a learning experience as well, right? You walk away from it going, okay, that did or didn't work. So going, just staying on that a little bit longer, the storytelling and narrative, like what is, do you have a sort of, when you go approach these projects, personal or commercial, is there something you're always trying to say, or is like, what is the message you're trying to get across? Is there a message, or it's sort of just this, you know, this adventure, freedom, because that's what we get, or myself as the viewer, whether it's looking at your work or your Instagram, it's this seizing the day, just getting out there, basically. Mm. And that's probably what commercial clients like, because that's what people want from adventure lifestyle brands, right? They want people to get out and use their products, so to speak. But that's something that just seems to come naturally to you. Is that sort of...
Yeah, I think like in Clarimise, like they're changing now. They want the typical inspiring story, inspiring photo, like adventure or like... So they're throwing themselves a little bit more into the adventure style of even if it's a commercial, sometimes they're like, okay, let's do this campaign by doing a bikepacking. I was like, oh, fuck, like, that's cool, you know? Like, that's what at the end, the other person will resonate with, like, not a fake situation, a real situation, right?
Yeah.
And that's sort of why, like, what I've been trying to put on pretty much every single of my shoot, like, it has to be natural. This has to be, because if I am seeing it, I look at some campaign of whatever big brand cycling or any other thing, I'm like, oh, this is so fake. Like, you know, like they overdone it.
Yeah.
Or, wow, this is like an adventure. This is kind of cool. And you sort of hook up like the situation itself, and that makes you be part of it a bit more, let's say, like this.
Yeah, you got to believe in it, right? Even as the creator, if you don't believe in it, then it's going to come across in the work.
Yeah.
Which I think is something that you've always been sort of authentic to. It's like, this is how it is.
Yeah.
And so, like, with those stories and projects, you just... I'm going to mess up this pronunciation. Montañas Vacías?
Montañas Vacías, yes.
That's
pretty good.
It's all, you know,
good.
I need to practice.
Better than my surname.
Only
Sorry.
No, I mean, it's fine. That's I deserve that. I practiced this for an hour and your surname only 10 minutes. So. You just got back from that, right? That was in the Spanish Laplands.
Yes.
What was that work? Was that personal? Was it sort of a...
So this is an event that Lyle Wilcox and Kamut has been had put together since now. This is the second edition, and the first edition was Torino Nice last year. There was like 20 or something women. I unfortunately was not able to join. If not, I would have definitely joined.
Yeah, sure.
And then this year they invite me into this one, which it was like totally amazing. It was work. I was a community manager for Komoot, and now I work in some bits and pieces with them, photography, video, whatever, and I'm ambassador myself. So I love that company anyway. So it's pretty cool to be around.
I've had periods of like, company you want to go work for, Berlin based.
Well, it's not based.
It's remote working, isn't it?
So that's even better.
Yeah.
Anyway, they're now all in the gathering, and I'm very jealous.
That's in the Pyrenees here somewhere, isn't it?
Like Austria, like in the middle of the mountains.
Right, because don't they also have the one, there's that hotel just in French Pyrenees where they had the get together.
Oh, but I think there was before, this is a very big gathering, and then I think they did like small ones because of COVID.
Right, okay.
Anyway, Lyle and Kamut bring this together, and they got Montañas Vacías as a route, which is an amazing route.
Beautiful.
Like mind-blowing. I I did a race before, so unfortunately I couldn't join the first bit.
Mm.
But if I wouldn't been like with a little bronchitis, what I have now,
yeah.
I would have done the three days after, or like after they finished the three first days, because it's amazing. Ernesto, which is the guy who done the route,
yes, I read about him,
the creator of the
yeah.
route, and,
yeah.
and on all this, he is like love, like amazing guy,
mm.
Really really welcoming, really honest, really amazing. And yeah, he created this, and 50 women from over 14 countries or 12 or 14
oh, wow.
countries came. Then some Americans who've never been in Europe came. They end up doing a tattoo and like...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's one
like,
of those experiences
oh
where it's like life-altering, life-affirming.
100%.
Whatever you
want to call it. Everything, everything happened. Lots of weather issues and not and stuff. It was... Everything,
because it's remote out there, right? Like it's super remote.
Montañas Vacías means empty mountains, and
good,
I promise
good.
You,
okay.
the name stands
the
for
name.
Itself.
Yeah.
Like wow, it's it, I was yeah, I was in a deep like
yeah.
empty mountains, yeah, and it was amazing. I mean, the it was so powerful. Like over the years, like I said it at the end. I said a little speech, and I ended up crying nearly because. At the end of this, for me, over all these years, I've never saw 50 women together in so like high spirits, the energy of it,
yeah.
and nobody complained, nobody had like a hustle or like there was some mechanics and stuff, but everybody like
they
enjoy
all,
it.
They all wanted to be there, and that was what I picked up through
yeah.
just through the pictures, and again, it's one dimensional, but it was like there were 50 women that had. It's because I think it sold out like instantly.
3 minutes.
Yeah, which is crazy. So that's like, and that's what we'll talk on in a bit. Excuse me,
mm-hmm.
woman in cycling. But that was such an indicator. And when I went on to, was it bikepacking.com, I think, where they had images of all the riders and their setup. And it's just
yeah.
like, you could see these were 50 women that do a lot of riding, you know.
No, there was people who didn't
had,
even like
oh, really?
Ride that distance ever in their life, or they rode like,
crazy.
Or they took a bike like a year ago, or like.
But
yeah.
they just like the idea of what this represented and off they went. Because it had that feeling, like seeing your images and all that, it was, it looked like a pretty special sort of event, and one that's obviously going to gain traction, I think, that's going to continue to be popular. And so that leads into the next thing, you know, women in cycling. It's something that I've been sort of pondering on a bit, and being in Girona, I wanted to try and catch up with people. I think there's quite a few women based here in Girona, such as yourself, who are... mixed, intrinsically linked to the cycling community, and how women's cycling has grown. Worldwide cycling has grown through COVID, everybody knows that.
Yeah.
But I just feel like there's been this real shift, almost like an independence, where they feel more comfortable to ride. Is it within, even the pro peloton, the way the women's pro peloton, it's working, it's different from even 2 years ago. And now with gravel, you're just seeing like this event now. It's growing so quickly.
Yeah.
Is that what you're seeing?
Yeah, I think gravel gave this little touch of confidence that maybe road cycling for women, it didn't give that much, because when you're in gravel, you have less danger, right?
Mm.
Like you don't have cars or burly cars. Like you always can cross because the paths are like paths for agriculture or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the same. And I think that gave a little, you know, a little more confidence, and also like the fact that you can that you can adventure anyway, and I think it hooks up a lot. It
takes the pressure away, it
takes
as well,
the pressure away.
Because like, I think that's what a lot of people worry when they look at your, for example, your adventures and your images. You give off that sense of like, I like riding my bike, I'm gonna attach the world's longest surfboard to it and just go off and find adventure. There's no reason for it, there's no, and it doesn't have to be, it's just. And then getting, like my thing is, I'm that feeling I get after a ride, that freedom, just even sitting on a bike, it's amazing. You just want to share that with people. And with road cycling, there's this barrier to entry, you know, it's the whole cliche, your sock height, you know, what brand you're wearing, your bike, etc. Whereas gravel, I've always felt, and that's one of the reasons I started this podcast, was just come as you are, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And there's less judgment. There's still little pockets of, I'm noticing where the gravel now, you know, what's cool in gravel and not, which is always going to happen.
I guess. It's funny, like, when I started, gravel for me was like, oh yeah, whatever. Like, it was not gravel, it was like, I'm going off-road and it's totally fine, you know, like, I didn't made it as a different thing of like my normal riding. It was, But now it became definitely a thing, and I think in racing, for example, and I've seen it when I started, or like, for example, Tracker here, or Ironbound,
yeah,
and other other races, you know, like we were 10, 20 maximum, like we were not more. And this last race here in Girona, which was like 2 weeks ago, the field was really big. We were, I think at the end on the three different distances, there were like 120 or 150 women.
Wow.
I was amazed.
And that's
like,
happened quickly. I mean, that's over
in
like
3 years.
Yeah, that's really, really happened quickly.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was thinking today, like I remember when I had my fixed gear and like pink front wheel, like men will stop me on the street and be like, oh my God, you have no brakes, you know,
yeah,
like, and you're a girl, like that was like that on
yes,
the
exactly.
time.
It's like,
and no, I don't remember doing any woman riding on the time, and now it's just like exploded, right? Like,
and it's a lot more equal now. Like I have,
yeah,
guys are starting to see that women are just as strong, if not stronger, on bikes, and you know they,
oh, yeah,
they can put the power down and put the hurt down just as much. Which
I mean,
I think
you
is,
can see Lyle Wilcox,
yeah,
just
exactly,
like breaking records of men, women,
way,
and everything.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's just it is. That's what I love about cycling, is that your body, you can put it, you know, you get it to a certain condition and you can just go and go,
yeah,
and go. One of the recent projects I saw that you're working with, the W Camps, which,
yeah,
what is that, what's that about?
So the W Camps is a camp that I started here in Girona, and it's a camp for initiation to backpacking.
Okay.
So to the same, to get more women, it's only a woman camp, and it's to get more women into backpacking, you know, like adventuring and stuff, like how to set up bikes for like long distance, short hotel packing that I call, or
yeah,
like
yeah, yeah,
camping
packing,
itself,
yeah,
yeah,
exactly,
how to cook outdoors, how to plan a route,
yeah,
and all this, and yeah, I will host the first one in June, yeah,
okay,
I just can't wait.
Yeah, I'm sure, as I say, I'm sure it's one of the many things you kind of have
on board, yeah,
have going. Okay, we spoke there about the growth in the current state and where cycling's going, but I think, especially as far as women cycling going, but I think it's clear to see that it's quite healthy at the moment, as long as people are able to get bikes, which is another conversation altogether. Where do you see it sort of going from here as far as women cycling? Is it just kind of a, does anything have to happen, or it's the natural progression that's happening now is sufficient, or do you think more work has to be done to kind of keep that momentum?
I think a lot of work still has to be done on women cycling in all the sense, and from amateur to like professional.
Yeah.
And I think it's doable. It's bit by bit, and we are trying to make it, you know. But there's still a lot of work to be done. And but I think it's going to be naturally, the growth itself is going to be what it implements this work, you know.
Yeah,
like.
Yeah.
I currently, like I can say here because it's already out, I literally just did a collection with Zara.
Oh wow.
Only for women cycling, and it's out. You can see it on the Zara website, so I did not post
it yet.
Is that
what
that? Yes.
Is, right.
is that what I said yesterday? A little tease, but. And I basically did this because I want more women into cycling. It's obviously
huge.
Not a 250 euro bib short,
mm-hmm,
but I think it's that kind of people who you can't reach if you're not a core, or if you're not like a niche into cycling,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
And they will reach out and they will see this, oh my God, like a new sport. Maybe
yeah.
I could give it a try. Maybe I can buy a bib short now
yeah,
that
yeah.
I have, you know, a brand like Zara helping out to get more women into the outdoors. So
that's amazing. I mean, that's huge.
It's,
I mean,
pretty big.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I know.
That's like, you know, got a little chills on that one. It's sort of like, because the barrier to entry, that's a thing, right? Cycling is this niche thing which I talk to my non-cyclist friends and they just kind of glaze over. They just don't get it. And then you get them on a bike and they're like, okay, I get it. So something like Zara, which is huge to, it's like, again, that barrier to entry comes down and more people on bikes, and that could have a huge effect.
Yeah.
That's very exciting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So hopefully that works, and yeah.
Okay. So that's live on the website, as you say, and then what? Is it sort of Europe?
It's worldwide.
How long have you been working on that for?
A year, nearly. Yeah.
Okay.
Like, yeah, 9 months. It got, yeah, a bit delayed, but yeah.
And that'll be, it's sort of on and off the bike stuff, I imagine.
It's literally, there's not even a jersey. Mm. I don't want to push people into wearing things that they're not comfortable with.
Yeah.
And I don't dress like that either.
Yeah.
I want to be comfortable on and off the bike, and I want to enter a restaurant and that they don't look at me like, oh my god, it's like an alien. Because people look at you like that when you're wearing road clothes.
When you come in, you click clock,
and your
click clock
clothes are like, you know, super arrow stuff is like, yeah. But I want people and women especially to feel comfortable with themselves. So I literally did some, you know, like a couple of bib shorts, long and short, some shorts, base layer merino stuff that I really like, and then a couple like t-shirts and a wind jacket. I didn't went crazy. It's not like a massive collection. It's a capsule. It's gonna happen once ever, and that's gonna be it. But yeah,
well, I don't think it'll be it. I dare say something like this would be a gateway drug, shall we say? Because that encapsulates everything perfectly. In that you want to get people comfortable on a bike, comfortable in themselves, and that's you know, like that you said, merino, cool. That's gonna practical, does the job. That's really exciting. It's kind of a whole different way of thinking. I think you can hear. I'm quite excited. That's very cool.
Sorry, there's no man.
No, I'm just like I'm honored that it was, you know, on my first in-person interview. Breaking news. Although by the time I managed to edit all this, it'll probably be sold out. But anyway, okay, cool. So I was going to ask you upcoming projects, but that's sort of clearly one you've been working on for a while, which is
I mean, it's out. I just didn't have time to like really put it properly.
It's all right, there, so they'll also push a little bit of it as well.
Yeah.
So that's cool. I've got a point here that goes up, and from the outside, it always seems like you're on the go at a million miles an hour. I feel like I would run out of energy if I try to keep up that sort of intensity. Or maybe that's the key. If you stop, you drop. Now, please tell me again if I'm putting words in your mouth, and this is purely from what you see on the screen. It's like your energy levels just seem. Is that something how you operate? Like you always have to be on the go, and if you stop, things are like, what do I do next, sort of thing?
Yeah. I mean, you got it totally right. It's funny, my friends are like, when I come back to Girona, instead of asking me now, how are you? They're like, when are you off next? That's like a question. I'm like, 24 hours or a week or like, I recently canceled like a big project of 3 weeks, and that sort of gave me like 3 weeks here at home, or like in Spain at least, without traveling. I did like a couple of races and stuff, but nothing big. And it was a need, you know, a little bit. But literally, after 2 weeks here, I was already getting overwhelmed. Like I needed to do something else. And like, I just fell apart. And like, yeah, sometimes the people are like, I can't keep up with you, like, with your life. Like, I don't understand how you're making it. I was like, I don't know, but I just like all in, and now I'm on this next 2 months. It's gonna be pretty hectic. Like,
I suppose coming into season, summer, riding. It's plus all the shooting. This is when a lot of the action happens. So yeah, I guess it's gonna be busy. But
I think it doesn't matter if it's summer or winter.
It doesn't matter. Yeah, well, you just drop skis to your bike and go do that.
Yeah.
So how was that trip, brother? Like that, I've never seen anything like that. It's like, with the road conditions, cycling like that, do you have to put special tires on?
This is just really funny. No, like, because I put this trip up and I hook up like a couple friends, and then it was like this super crazy heat wave on the Alps. There was no snow for like a month or two.
That's right.
And I was like, I was freaking out. It's like I literally put this thing on skis and we might have to just hike because there was no snow. So I arrived there on a Monday and we were riding on like short, and you know, I was like, oh, this is like a happen. And then you look at the weather and suddenly it was coming 3 days of like full on winter snow. And we were really lucky and we did the trip with normal tires, nothing major, because the roads are still like sort of wet or like dryish. And we had the best snow of the season, like amazing. I'm also getting like a little fun video out of this one. But yeah, it was really, really, really cool.
Yeah.
And I've seen that from some guys, some German guys called Max and George Gurb, I can't remember, that they were doing Balkans. So they did like, I don't know, 3,000 kilometers with skis and stuff and camping and everything. And I was like, damn, this is amazing. I want to do this, you know?
Yeah.
And I literally bought all the equipment. I just went to do it. I'm into those things.
No, that's what I love, because I mean, that's so motivational for people. And you mentioned the Balkans. This is the point I definitely want to talk to you about, because I spend a lot of time in Montenegro. Like,
oh, I love
Montenegro.
Montenegro
and Croatia, like over a year, 2 years over the years, based there in Tivat. And I know you guys did the film.
The Last Outskirts.
Yeah,
right,
where
yeah.
you went into Albania and you landed, you started in Montenegro. So have you done much riding in Montenegro itself?
No.
Like it is
amazing.
I'm trying to get more and more people to go there because of they're now also putting millions into their infrastructure, the roads
mm-hmm.
on next level.
Mm-hmm.
But the gravel riding, like mm-hmm. my after work ride would be 50 kilometers, 1,000 meters of climbing. Well, and there's a couple of dangerous dogs, which you guys would have encountered, I'm sure. They're kind of, a little bit scary, those dogs. But other than that, just no one. It's the place. It's the next frontier, I think, as far as sort of gravel riding goes. Croatia into Montenegro, Bosnia, all of that was
really
I have it
on my
schedule.
On the list. I have it on my schedule for the summer, but not Montenegro, somewhere Albania.
Okay, Albania. Yeah, I only crossed briefly into Albania.
Oh, I love Albania. I just have a lot of that country.
Yeah,
I don't know
so
why.
I'd like to definitely head back there and see more of that. Cool. Okay, well, I think, as I say, we've spoken about a lot here today. Upcoming projects, is it just anything you can talk about, or it's like it's a scroll of many, many jobs? And
it's a scroll of many, many things. I think I have like a lot of shoots coming up.
Any traveling sort of
a
where,
lot of traveling
yeah.
And then I have the double cams, then I have a couple routes on the Alps, Swiss Alps, and then Alps itself, and then I got myself like a birthday present as a photography and climbing environment on the Arcteryx Academy.
Wow.
So that was like, just do something different this year and for my birthday, and then I'm doing that. So that's also pretty cool. And then I have a couple of races, like the Rift in Iceland.
Are you doing the Rift this
year?
Yeah, oh, wow.
I'm doing it again, finally.
You didn't do it?
I did it the first year.
Yeah, the first year, okay. Yeah.
And they're super cool because, I mean, if you get a podium, you kind of get another entry. But then it was that was pandemic. And then after pandemic, it was a year that I didn't even did one event. And then... yeah, and then I was like, okay, this year.
Yeah, that's a bucket list race, that one, the Rift for me. But I mean, that thing sells out in seconds. It
yeah,
looks like
well, because a lot of people had other entries.
Alternative entries. So.
But I'm also I also put myself up into like this trail running race this weekend. So good luck for me.
So you did the 200K last week at the tracker. It's got some events. And my friend will be doing the further in August, the one here in the Pyrenees.
I had that on my list, but I don't really like climbing, so
yeah, he had to buy
a
special like hike biker's shoes. I'm like, nah, I'm not, and I want to ride my bike, I'm all for that, but
decide which one.
Awesome, okay, well,
and a lot.
So it's gonna be, I was gonna say a busy summer, but it's a busy year, or whatever. It's
I think cool. like I don't have a break until, yeah, a long time.
A lot of traveling. One last it's question fine. So, place you haven't ridden yet. That you want to go ride, bikepacking, race.
Turkey. I'm into Turkey now.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, I have a friend that also sent me Turkey, and now I've been.
Whereabouts in Turkey? I've spent a fair bit of time there, but only on the coast.
Just starting from Istanbul, just getting into the inside, like the Lapland of Turkey, right? Like.
Turkey.
And Cappadocia for sure, just arriving to there or something. I don't know, I'm mapping a route now. There I've been in Albania, but I've been for a rally, so I kind of also have some mapping there now.
I guess it helps if you've been there, kind of just get a feel for the place, so that when you are planning routes you kind of know what you're dealing with. Which is cool.
That's in my list.
Awesome. Well, Sammy, thank you so much for taking the time to chat. I think that was really good.
Yeah,
appreciate
thank
the
you.
Time.
Thank you for having me here.
Yeah, that's awesome. Cool. Thank you for letting me in the studio.
Yeah.
Cool. All right.
And there we go. My chat with Sammy. I thoroughly enjoyed that conversation. I really left there, left her studio feeling pretty motivated, inspired. Sammy really radiates an enthusiasm which is quite infectious, and hopefully that came across in the recording, and it was part of the reason why I didn't want it to be too structured in the way I recorded. You know, didn't want to worry too much about the technicalities of sound, etc. Sometimes you just want to capture the moment, and that's very much what this was for me, to sit down and talk with Sammy about what she's involved with, where she's come from, how she ended up, you know, in this sort of storytelling role, which she clearly is so motivated by and driven by. It was wonderful. And I think the breaking news, shall we say, towards the end of the show there, working with a company like Zara only exemplified or that particular point. Exemplified? Is that the right word? I don't know. Probably not. You know, to work with a company like that wouldn't have been something I imagined was not a decision she would have taken lightly. And this is purely assumptions on my behalf. Because Sammy is someone that, in her work, there is an authenticity to it. There is a narrative. There is a message that it seems she wants to portray with her work. And when you work with bigger companies, sometimes what is required can be different to what you envision. But that being said, I feel the positives would far outweigh the negatives. And maybe that is why Sammy decided to work with a company like Zara, because of the exposure that would give to our sport. And it's not just about the exposure, it's about the items as well. You know, we're making cool, comfortable clothing that hopefully will allow more women to feel comfortable to get on a bicycle and go for a ride, which is, at the end of the day, what this is all about. It's getting people on bikes. That's why I started this channel. That's why we all ride bikes, because of how it makes us feel. So hopefully you took that, as I say, that same motivation, enthusiasm as I did from that show, and take it off into your day. So yes, thank you for listening, everyone. I hope to be a little less intermittent with shows over the coming weeks and months. My schedule is hopefully going to allow a bit more of that. A little bit of housekeeping. As always, guys, podcasts, without reviews and ratings, no one sees these things. I'm not about the reviews and ratings, but it would be nice for people to hear, because I think things like today's show, at Sammy, people should hear it, because there's some good stuff in there. So please, wherever you listen to your podcasts, leave a review, leave a rating. Find us on Instagram at The Gravel Junction Podcast, at Sammy Sowry as well, of course. Pretty easy to find, but if you don't already, give her a follow. The W camps and all the other projects that Sammy's involved with, very exciting. And get to Girona, come for a ride, it's worth it. All right, guys, thank you for the time. We'll talk soon. Bye bye for now.